This is the one with a black hole.
Messy marker pens, disappearing tattoos.
And oodles of ood.
It's called The Impossible Planet.
Here we go!
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Daleks, Cybers, and Dude, wow!
Tennant, Smith, and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha, and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when? Who back when?
What up? This is Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast, episode N022, The Impossible Planet.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Drew.
That's right.
Will you put me on the spot right now? I have to think.
Dr. Drew.
Dr. Drew. Next to Dr. Drew is...
Nicolelli. How's it going? And to my left, the indelible Ponkin.
That's me.
Hello. What's up? So, we've made it all the way to N022.
Goddamn right we have.
Yeah, we have. And we're starting with The Impossible Planet, which I feel like we should start with the title. How do we feel about the title? Are you happy with the title?
I feel like the title should have been a budget version of Event Horizon. No? Just me?
What I'm generally upset with is the impossible something becomes like a bit of a syntactical trope all the way through Who.
Yeah, yeah. You have the impossible girl. You have the anything else?
I'm sure there is. We'll get to it. But okay. It just feels like a very...
The impossible plot.
This shouldn't be happening. Yeah, there you go, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Not often called by name, but definitely ever present.
Do you have any housekeeping before we get into the B scale?
No.
No?
No.
All right, let's jump straight in.
Doc and Rose materialise in a cupboard, a.k.a. Storage Space 6, aboard a space base.
Also on the base are English humans, obviously, and their servant race of Ood.
They've embarked to colonise the planet, itself suspended in space next to a black hole in a futuristic adaptation of petro-imperialism.
B-Scout over.
You are welcome.
Goddamn right you are. Okie dokie. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, check this out. Because it's a first in Who Back When, because not only are we recording this episode in front of a live studio audience.
Say hey.
Hello.
We are recording it in front of a live studio audience of two.
Hot damn.
Yeah. Some of you may recall in the episode The Sensorites, which actually fits in really well to this review. We recorded that episode in front of a live studio audience of one.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Doubled our audience in a matter of 2 years.
Every time that we arrive at another episode with related characters, we'll add another person to the audience.
Cool.
Welcome. Welcome. Both of you. Yeah.
Yes, you get welcome each.
Okie dokie.
So, as mentioned in the B-Scale, we materialise in the cupboard in the TARDIS.
In my notes, I have it as the TARDIS rams its way into a snug backstage area.
Of course you do.
Could not have said it better.
And it only gets better from there.
Yeah. So we materialise in what the Doctor Summer hypothesises is a space base.
Yes. And also, I think right off the bat, we get our first example of the writer ham-fisting some romantic tension between the two, and the two, being Rose and Doc, not necessarily executing it very well, in my opinion.
Hmm.
I think it's ridiculously over-the-top, mega-cheesy.
Well, I sometimes think that the Doctor and Rose, relationship, or any sort of its veneration, is mostly just about consistency. It's basically every 10 minutes we get a, yeah, they're still romantically involved. And then we kind of move on. And then by the end, you've got so much of that we feel like, oh yeah, this has been going on for a while.
But sure, but are they not hamming it up a little bit?
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. The subtlety is kind of gone. And they're just like, oh, 10 minutes has gone without us referring to this. We should refer
when was the last time? When was the last time that they referred to this?
Well,
it was the Cat Planet one.
They had a huge... I mean, Girl in the Fireplace was basically the entirety of it was...
That wasn't love between the Doctor and Rose. That
But I think it was done sort of in absentia, if you will, in that because he was having a relationship with another woman, it only served to highlight Rose's affection for him.
Interesting.
I think you have to concede because I used the words in absentia.
Yes, well, Latined, but I feel like in that one, because what's-his-face, the guy that I absolutely hate, Mickey Ricky, was in there, and she was showing him around, she was like, oh, check it out, I'm totally used to space and whatever. That was kind of the romantic subplot.
Okay, we'll shelve it for the moment.
Yeah,
we'll
whatever. Let's get back to this episode.
But the other thing that they sort of was quite a fun joke between them is, you know, oh, looks like trouble. Should we leave? Ha 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 ha. And yeah. I quite like that. That was quite fun. That was fun. Just because, you know, actually, I think that every time when they're like, oh, we've crash landed. Should we just stay with the ship, get it fixed and fuck off? No.
No, you should go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Sooner or later, you're going to arrive on Risa or somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Indeed. So then they decide it's time to leave the props department and head to somewhere with more, you know, auxiliary cast.
Yes.
Well, actually, so here's another strange point, is that I feel like the first interaction, which is with the Ood, I feel like that's some weird intergalactic xenophobia on their part, and maybe our part as the audience, that they're kind of like, these people are, you know, the Ood present themselves, and they're like, oh, God, they must be hostile. Like,
so I don't think so. I absolutely don't think so. Yeah. I think it's like, oh, wow, they're startled that they're seeing someone, like, yeah, you know, yeah. They open a door and there's someone there. But the actual fear doesn't turn up until the Ood goes, we must feed.
Yeah, we must feed.
And but quite it's just like menacingly start approaching them.
I don't know about menacingly. Definitely slowly. Slowly and ambly.
Yeah. What else ambles slowly and menacingly?
No, I'm not going. No, don't say the Z word. Yes. Do not say the Z word.
Absolutely.
But I think that it's intergalactic xenophobia. I think they're seeing some people that don't quite look like them, and then they treat them as hostile immediately without any real evidence.
Agree to disagree.
Drew?
Well, yeah. Drew, oh my God, yes, you're the arbiter. 50-50, which side are you going to take? Yeah.
But what if I have a, you know...
Or a third opinion.
Exactly.
What is it?
Well, it was just that I was really unconvinced. And I saw it coming a mile away. And I wondered how anyone who wasn't a child seeing it for the first time could possibly fall for it.
Well, yeah, the thing is, I don't think that... I think the intention of the writers, though, was to make you fall for it, even if they fucked it up. So, yeah, I think it's sort of implied...
I think there's a parallel as well. Okay, this is the pre-credit sequence, right? Mm. This is what happens, or pre-title sequence. It ends on a cliffhanger. We don't know what's going to happen. They've been cornered by these slowly, menacingly, not quite zombies, whatever. There's a parallel in... what's it called? The one set in London with the gas mask zombies? Doctor Dances? Not the Doctor Dances. The first one. Whatever it's called. Empty Child! Thank you very much, audience member Miriam. Yeah, that episode ended with them being cornered in the hospital by all these zombies. Boom, cut. Exactly the same thing is happening here.
It's a cinematic thing, isn't it?
That's sure. Happened, you know, it happened recently in Doctor Who. Okay, whatever. Blah, 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 blah. Title sequence, Shazamatron, and they finish the sentence. Before title sequence, they go, we must feed...
you. All right, I get it. That's funny. That's kind of comic and cool, but that sentence doesn't make sense. Who does that? If you're a really, like, servile and cool person, like, you know, as soon as I come here, someone said, hey, would you like a drink? It's like... I must feed you. No one says that.
Yeah,
like,
but...
would you like something to eat? Because actually...
Should be more racially tolerant because this race of Ood, they have other customs, man.
Absolutely not, because the second part of that sentence was, we can furnish you with refreshments. Like,
okay, fair enough. There is no consistency there.
Just lead with that.
Something that pisses me off is that one of them, the guy who then finishes the sentence, he taps his little, like, brain microphone.
Yeah.
And goes, oh, apologies, my mic is broken. So why was everyone saying the wrong sentence? Like, why was everyone stopping?
Oh, because they have a hive brain, don't they?
Do they have a hive brain?
Yeah, they sort of like this network bullshit. It's never really fully explained.
Oh, that pisses me off as well, actually.
They have a hive brain. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that.
Okay. Okay. Let's move on.
Oh, no. So then the humans, the mighty overlords, burst in and say, who the hell are you?
And are you real? Apparently, yes.
Yeah, apparently, yes.
On the basis of no further evidence, I've reached a conclusion.
Yeah, they seem completely fine with them suddenly having appeared.
That's my problem with this.
This is exactly what happened
entire
in the
fucking like episode.
In fact, we talked about this in the last two reviews.
Almost.
What is going on?
Almost every
Why
episode.
Why is this always happening?
It just kills us. It's like, why the fuck are you here in this impossible way? I am.
Impossible.
Okay.
Fine.
You'd think they wrote this without consulting us first.
Yeah, where were we when they penned this?
But I feel like, I don't know, if someone was to randomly turn up in, for example, this room.
Yeah.
Just unannounced, didn't know who they were. Random person, I might have more than one motherfucking question. Like, how did you get here? Who the fuck are you? Can you please leave?
What may I feed you with?
Yeah, absolutely. But everyone's just like, okay, cool, you're part of the team now.
You kind of get the impression that maybe they've been there for such a long time that they haven't seen humans, other humans, in ages. And the fact that maybe this feeds into your theory of xenophobia, that because they show up and they look like humans, one of them actually is a human, they probably assume that both are, they welcome them.
Still questioned, I think.
No, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, anyway. So they get taken to the command?
Yeah, the other humans.
Yeah.
Yes, and the control center.
And we get the first of three mentions of the exact same line.
Go.
You're not joking. You really don't know? Fuck off! Three times? Really? Every single time, it's like, oh, you don't know where you are? You're not joking, are you? God damn it, no, I'm not. How many times do I have to repeat my ignorance for you to understand that this isn't humour?
All right, I'm going to try to not drag out this labour this point too much. But so these random people have turned up in a place in the universe that you've made great pains to tell us that only you could have ever got to, because it's the most ridiculous place that could ever exist, hovering above a, you know, an all-crushing, conquering, you know, quasar space whole thing in there, you know. And then a couple of people turn up and you're like, oh, they exist. Oh, haven't you heard of this place? It's like...
But it's not always about the planet. It's, I think, twice about the planet, once about the Ood. It's like, oh, you don't know what an Ood is.
The whole lot.
You're not kidding.
I'm just like, okay, all of these are flags, motherfucker. Ask more questions. All of these are just like little red flags to go,
don't trust this blonde girl.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's just they've been on the base too long.
Stop it. No.
They've forgotten, you know, other reference points in life. The next thing would be, don't you know who I am? I've been here the whole time.
They've forgotten basic critical thinking skills. Great.
Maybe it's just a question of missing leadership. They do mention that they've lost their captain. So now it's just like the whole space base is just run by dilettantes. They have no idea what's going on. Some stranger turns up. They're like, yeah, that's fine. Great, maybe he's captain material. He wears glasses. By the way, guys, this is clearly the episode in which Tennant proves once and for all that he doesn't really need glasses.
Yeah.
He puts on and takes off his glasses at random. What he sometimes needs them whilst reading, sometimes he needs them when he's looking afar. Like, this guy definitely...
Could they not be psychic glasses?
Yeah, might be.
Okay, like 30 seconds of some sort of tremor, I don't know what.
They run to the control center. Yeah, they are in peril.
Something happens, they're all good again, and then they explain their mission a bit more, which is essentially try to harness the power of this ridiculous planet that exists that shouldn't exist.
Yeah, we get to see the view, right?
Yes, the view of the space hole.
The black hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Does that explain it? I think that explains it.
I think that's it.
There's a black hole nearby.
That's sure.
Yes, it's above our heads. We should look at it. Although it might drive you mad.
Why? Why would it drive you mad? God damn it! This is another thing that
pisses
me off. It's a fucking black hole.
Unlike the whole of space. Right?
Okay, it doesn't matter. But actually, we missed a fairly key point, which was the squiggly squoggly hieroglyphs.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Well, welcome to hell, squiggly, squiggly, squiggly.
Just kidding, in old language.
Yeah, absolutely. Mega lols.
You have to be the one to work here.
They're just hashtags. They're just different hashtags. Like, welcome to hell, you know, fuck the haters, or whatever the, you know, the kids say.
And we find out.
The Hades.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
Yes,
yeah.
Much better. Much better.
Well done. One of the dudes, whom we're going to meet later on, what's it? Toby.
Toby the Dick.
Toby the Dick. Toby, who, by the way, would be so much scarier if his name weren't Toby.
Toby is the most menacing English name.
Toby? The name we dare not utter.
Toby is a King Charles Spaniel. Toby, drop it!
Toby is there as... What's his job? He's like the...
He's there.
The anthropologist.
Yeah, he's the anthropologist or like a paleontologist. Whatever. He's, he looks at old shit.
So he has... He's written in glyphs. There's some legend that says whatever, blah, blah, blah. The devil ate this planet or whatever and then spit it back out. And that's what it is.
Okay,
whatever. So he's copied scripture. He's copied glyphs from the scripture. And above it, he's written, welcome to hell. And no one has gone, alarm bells, guys. Like, maybe he should see the space base shrink. Like, this guy clearly needs therapy or Valium or something. Why would you do that? Well, and if nothing else, it's fucking vandalism, man.
I think on Space Base 6, you just have to take everything on face value. Don't interrogate anything. Don't scratch below the surface, because...
The whole point is scratching below the surface.
Don't do it, man.
I was going to say that's not what they're there to do. It's exactly what they're there to do.
Okay, take us through their mission.
We can only dig a little deeper in one place.
Yes, which is not our minds.
Yeah. So the mission is that they found a power source or some issue in the middle.
Yeah, there's something holding this planet in place.
Yeah, and they're...
Impossibly.
And they're drilling down to find it, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a tale as old as time.
One of those classic, well, let's drill down to the centre of this impossible planet tales.
Basically, it's as old as when George Bush Sr. felt like he would liberate Kuwait. It's that.
Yeah, except there are no people on this planet. Like, they're not taking it from someone. They're not. Okay, let's not get into a political.
Yeah, they totally would, though.
Yeah, they absolutely would.
They're sort of taking it from someone.
Yeah, it's from one guy with horns.
Yeah, but they don't know about it. They think this planet is just completely uninhabited, right? They don't assume that there's a weird demon dude stuck in the center of it.
Fair enough.
Spoilers?
No spoilers. Then we get the hugging scene.
Oh, no, wait.
Oh, okay.
There's a bit of exposition before the hugging scene.
Okay.
Which was about how it is impossible to get here.
And what they
do is they show a graphic with the planet and a big cone stretching out in a straight line away from the planet. So basically, it's impossible to get to the planet because you've got to fly in a straight line down this cone towards the planet.
Yes. It doesn't make any sense. Like,
yeah, it makes perfect sense.
No, I have such
is it just such
a basic grasp of physics, right? But let's say this, though.
Guys, maybe you didn't know this, but I did a master in black holes. I can totally vouch for this.
But let's say there's a black hole, right? And there's a planet with a cone. Everything that's sucking towards the black hole and then, you know, and so if it's a linear cone, it goes out for a bit and gets bigger, so it traps all the matter that's going to be pulled towards the black hole, and it just fucking sits there in the cone.
Yes, but I reckon if you travel in the middle of this cone... Was it actually a cone?
It was a cone.
Okay. Yeah, it was conical, alright.
Okay. If you travel along the centre of this conical safety zone...
Yeah, towards... which you would do if you were heading straight for the planet.
Yeah.
Can we call it the Wide Sargasso Cornetto?
I have no better suggestion.
All right, sold. I think at a certain within a certain radius, this black hole is just sucking stuff up, right? So this cone reaches outside of that radius. So there is a point in which it is actually, or at which point it's actually safe to go into that cone. But if you were to go to the side of it, you would just get sucked in.
It sucks in light and it's in a nebula.
No, I completely disagree with you. This black hole does not suck in light. It also does not suck time. It does, however, suck. Because, like, we get video footage of a black hole. How do we get video footage? Is that the... Maybe that's why it drives people mad. Because, like, they shouldn't be able to see it. Like, it's black. Yeah. It should not have any light.
This paradox is blowing my mind.
Yeah. Exactly.
Can I just say, I'm really sorry I opened up this cone of worms.
Oh, okay,
that's fine. That's
cut awful. That.
All right, okay, so, and then the hugging scene, which we got to spend some time on because it's some bullshit.
Why do they hug?
The reason is to ham-fist the idea of human endeavour and human pioneering to be a virtuous, like, endeavour. To be
and
like,
not just that, it's like the one quality in humanity that the Doctor really admires.
Yeah, it's like...
I love that.
It's like...
Yeah. That's a brilliant tenet.
It's like watching a baby plough into a fucking coffee table. You go, oh, yeah, but at least, he was adventuring. Yeah. It's like...
You wanted to know what it felt like.
Yeah, now we've got to go to the hospital.
But the really annoying thing isn't even Tennant going, oh, now I really want to I want to hug. He hugs Zach, whose name, by the way, is Crossflame or something.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And he was happy to be hugged. He felt like...
Yeah, he's like, yeah, bring it in, man. Give me some sugar.
Almost total stranger.
Yeah.
To be fair, if I've been stuck on a rock and, like, you know, hovering across a black hole, I'd probably want to hug too.
Well,
but still, it was stupid.
Regardless,
also, as the Doctor lets him go, he lets out a weird sort of post-hug noise. I don't know if you noticed this, but I played it over and over again. It was like...
Oh, really?
Definitely soundbiting
that. Yeah, it was... I described it as possibly the Doctor's orgasm.
Okay.
And I implore you to look it up.
Okay, so soundbite?
Soundbite.
Thanks, Chewie.
Okie dokie, so they hug. By the way, we're like 5 minutes into this episode.
Yeah, okay. Well, so let's shuffle it along.
Then the next scene is Doctor and Rose run back to the cupboard.
Exactly.
Because the captain's you didn't park it there, did you?
Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah, exactly. We get there's like a...
Actually, I thought this was relatively clever, right? So they parked in section 6, and then, like, and fairly slyly, the captain says, oh, we've lost sections 5 through 8.
Yeah.
And no one twigs until later. He's like, fuck, you said 5 through 8.
Yeah,
we're in 6. And usually, that's usually they wouldn't do do then. Yeah. Just be like, we lost section 6. That's where you were parked, wasn't it? And yeah, so I thought it was fun.
That's cool. True. I agree with that. However, classic case of the Davis Principle. Once again, the episode is basically tied together. Or it's a double episode, I guess. But it's basically tied up in this nice little bow of, they are now separated from the TARDIS. Yada, yada, yada. This will end when they reach the TARDIS again. I haven't rewatched the second episode yet, but I did add a note. I wonder if I'm going to be right. I've said the TARDIS will totally have landed sunny side up. Completely goddamn sure it will.
Well, it can manipulate gravitational fields, can't it? Or something?
Okay, fine, yeah. All right.
Are you part of the writing staff?
Sorry,
sounds like some shit that they'd say.
Can I also say the one thing I hated most about this scene?
Please.
Which is that the Doctor is running flat out to, you know, through door 18, come on, come on, door 19, door 17, all the doors, all the teens. And he gets to the end, he's banging on the door. And Rose goes, Doctor, what's wrong? The TARDIS is in there because... She
can't count.
She's just too stupid. Doctor, why are you angry at all? Because...
Read between the lines, man.
Because the TARDIS is in there, and so there's no reason that you should be angry, so I don't understand.
I need to be this indignant and ignorant to leverage dramatic irony.
Yes.
That's exactly
it's interesting.
What
when I was watching this, I wasn't as into it, but now that you've opened my eyes to that...
Now you can never enjoy it again.
To be honest, why did he run at all? Literally said the entire section is fucked. They're not only just that section, but the three sections adjacent to it. Your TARDIS is gone now.
Yeah, but you never know. Maybe he could look out the window and see the TARDIS like just pristine out there.
Just chilling.
Or like floating around, bobbing around. Maybe he sees it floating towards the black hole. Wait a minute, guys. Why isn't it floating towards the black hole?
Still on the planet.
So, what's her face? The chick who, spoiler alert, dies later on. She's floating just outside the dome. She floats towards the black hole. Remember? Water boobies? We talked about this before the episode.
We did. Let's get away. We'll get there.
Right?
Yeah, don't jump
totally, ahead. She floats towards the thing. Yeah, so it's basically like if you're not on the surface, you're totally floating towards the black hole.
Yeah, that's bullshit, isn't it?
Okay, whatever. Alright, so speaking of that chick, she's now outside in a spacesuit. You need a spacesuit to survive on the surface of this thing.
Yes, there is no atmosphere.
Nicely clarified.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put a pin in that. We're going to find out otherwise in a moment. Yep.
So now can we get to Toby and the hieroglyphs?
Ugh, yeah, go for it.
So Toby's working away like the busy beaver that he is on, presumably is the Rosetta Stone of this squiggly Sharpie.
How is it a Rosetta Stone?
Is that he's trying to figure out from a thing, comparing to a thing. Yeah, that's what he...
That's the same language, though. The whole point of the Rosetta Stone is that
I think we...
What are you doing, man?
We don't have...
What are you talking about?
We can't interrogate the things he had. Maybe he had a different text.
There are, like,
to the other
archaeologists
thing.
Listening to this podcast who are, like, just punching themselves in the face. Like, goddamn, Nicolele, what are you talking about? You're my hero.
We have no idea what text he had access to. Maybe he had, a big stone that was related
that
to
is possible
and, yeah, I know
sure okay fine so he's reading that. Can I just point out that while he's reading that, he's sitting on the floor next to a massive metal cylinder upon which is written Chub.
Lovely. Okay. So, and then a disembodied voice, which I think he's already encountered at this point, starts to whisper Toby enchant him. And then he's not to turn around because he'll die immediately, but this voice is coming ever closer and will touch him and inhabit him.
I thought for a moment that it was one of the other crew members just playing a prank on him. That we were to believe that it was a demon, then it was like the twist would be, oh, it's just his like roommate who's.
Oh, no, so I never thought that. I just went along with it. But I think that the weird thing about this was, if I was Toby and some weird thing was said, it's like, don't turn around or you're going to die, but I'm going to come get you anyway. It's like, well, fuck it, I'll turn around then. Like, what's the
something that's
going to
kill
not
me behind me?
You've already stated how you're going to kill me.
Yeah.
Or you have the ability to kill me. I'm not going to trust you. You sound like a dick.
Yeah. Fair point. So yada, yada, yada. He takes off his gloves and covered in glyphs.
And then they're all over his face and then he falls over. Can I say, I looked up a bit of Who trivia, which is that the voice of the demon, the actor, apparently played Sutek in the classic Who serial Pyramids of Mars.
Oh, nice one.
So strong.
I love Pyramids of Mars.
Yeah,
Tom Baker.
This guy also made appearances, you know, throughout his career in The Boy with a Cart, The Fortunes of Nigel, and Bogner.
Bogner?
Bogner. Yes, Bogner. Those are his other major
works. Not Regis.
Just Bogner.
Just Bogner. Cool. I think they planned to make a sequel, but they didn't get the money.
Cool. Okay.
What was his name? Did you get his name?
I did not get his name.
I'll cut that bit.
Please insert his name here.
Bing bong, future Ponkin here, recording really quietly because I'm recording quote-unquote live from outside my local library. The gentleman in question is called Gabriel Wolfe, and check this out, he also reappeared as Sutek in the 2004 Doctor Who comedy short, Oh Mummy, Sutek's Story. And archive footage of him voicing Sutek also appeared in the 2010 Sarah Jane Adventures episode, Death of the Doctor Part 2, in which another actor provided some voice work as well, namely David Freaking Bradley, who in turn would later portray William Hartnell and the First Doctor in the 50th anniversary biopic, An Adventure in Space and Time. Holy crap. Okay, I've got librarians looking at me. I gotta go. Ciao. Back to the show.
Okay, so, you know, this sets us up quite nicely that Toby is the vessel for the beast.
Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Can we fast forward to a line that the Doctor tells Rose?
I know exactly. No, it's not Rose. No, you're correct.
I think what was maybe we're thinking of different lines.
Yeah, of course.
Because he's lamenting the loss of his TARDIS.
Yeah.
And she goes something like, yeah, well, I mean, it's a fantastic machine.
Yeah.
And he goes, TARDISes were grown on my planet. They weren't built.
Yeah, well, the thing is alive, isn't it? The TARDIS is alive. It's a living thing.
Okay, yeah, fair enough, actually.
Yeah,
okay, I take it back.
The thing that I was going to get at, which is, so I guess, yeah, we have that weird little bit where they're trying to plan out their life now.
It's yeah.
Like, oh, you'll have to get a mortgage. Maybe we get the same mortgage.
Oh, no.
Yeah, maybe we get a civil partnership.
Maybe we can move in together.
Yeah.
Do you like Cocker Spaniels?
No, I hate Cocker Spaniels. This will never work. but yeah, so we have that basically, you know, that little, hey, we should fall in love.
And soundbite time, he refers to the promise that he made to Jackie, which we talked about in prior reviews.
Yeah, totally.
I think in the last one that we did together.
Yeah, which he sometimes just flouts.
That's true.
I promised Jackie I'd always take you back home.
Everyone leaves home in the end.
I think that the next then is the woman, I forget his name, what's her name?
Oh, yeah, what's her face?
Scooty.
Well, before that.
Scooty.
Scooty.
Yeah, sorry, Drew.
There's a thing which picks up on previously, where in portentous tones, the woman says, look at the roof, I'm going to make you mad all over again. And the Scarlet System, look at the Scarlet System, it is falling to its majestic death. And clearly, the writers were like, we're going to CGI the shit out of this ceiling.
Yeah,
you should overact to the fucking maximum, and we will not let you down. Oh, crap, our money ran out.
Yeah, and instead we get some like pink dust.
Pink, yeah. Anyway, yeah, that was pretty bad. But yeah, let's fast forward then to Scooty.
Scooty.
Scooty
and the Blowfish.
Who's going to look for Toby, presumably, for some reason. And
I got the impression that they were a couple.
Maybe. Toby would be happier.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. He's just some boring anthropologist on a space base. Why do they need an anthropologist on the space base, by the way?
Because he thinks that there's going to be a civilization when they get down there.
Oh, yeah, fair
enough.
He did
say that.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
So she's going to see him, and then the computer says that someone's gone outside.
Yeah.
The airlock has been activated and they've gone outside. So she tries to find out who.
Looks out the window.
So she's like, I know, I've got this. I'll see whose spacesuit has been checked out. Which we've already established. You can't survive outside without a spacesuit.
Yeah.
And the computer says no one's. Yeah. Or something like that, right?
So she looks out the window and hey presto, there is Toby sans spacesuit.
The computer says he bathes in the black light or something, or the black sun.
Yeah.
Light of the black sun, something like that. Yes. Yeah, he's just sunning himself. He's just getting a tan. Catching a tan.
Yeah.
What's weird is that, so
that's not weird.
Yeah, okay, there's more weird. So Squiggly Toby turns around with a menacing, you know, glare and looks at her.
Can we please call him something other than Toby? I cannot take this character seriously.
Squiggly Toby. Squiggly
okay.
Toby's. Toby Dick.
Okay.
Anyway.
Toby Dick. Excellent.
Yeah, so he turns around and beckons Scooty across, which I actually thought was an interesting scene because I think that was the sort of lure of the devil, you know, the sort of implicit that it's not always about force with the devil. Sometimes it's just a seductive force.
Yeah.
So like she's
for a moment there,
her.
she's going
of her own sort of volition, maybe not free will. I scarce to say the word free will, but of her own volition.
Is that not the same?
Pretty much from the same Latin.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. Yeah. But
Jesus Christ, in absentia, then, like volition. Okay, yeah.
Fine. Anyway, but then she breaks free of his seductive spell. But then the weirdest thing for me there is that he's got, like, fucking superpowers.
He has telekinetic powers.
He has the Force, and it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, why didn't you do this shit earlier? Or just do other
things? Why not just do that all the time? If you have telekinetic powers, just break out of your goddamn prison.
Yeah. So he breaks the glass, sucks her out into the worlds of the
planet.
And she floats off.
Yes. And we then cut to the, like, main room, whatever, where they can open up the ceiling.
Yeah, they've lost a bunch of sections. Everyone's there apart from Scooty.
They look out the windows, and there is Scooty. This is the water boob scene. She's floating atop, like, outside the room, and slowly but surely being pulled into the black hole.
Mm. Which is, the effect, the water boob effect, was that's how they achieved the effect of weightlessness, is that they did shot that underwater.
Yeah. Which is and awesome. Also, just to clarify, ladies and gentlemen, before we press record, Nick had just turned up, and I was reading aloud from IMDb trivia, which I wholeheartedly suggest that you do as well. You need to read aloud from it. And there is a piece of trivia there that says that to achieve this effect, they filmed it underwater. And Nick pointed out he realized this by...
By the boob. And I don't want to say that that's exactly, like, that's what I'm looking for. It's like, I need to, you know, that's...
I was going to say hair, but yes, you're right, also the boobs. But the hair, clearly the hair.
I feel like I'm just going to put myself at the mercy of our listeners to think that once you're back, the boobs are a telltale sign. That's just what it is. Let's move on.
Sure. Let's move on to a soundbite.
Yeah, whatever floats your boob.
Oh, I know what soundbite you're going for.
Soundbite, 31 minutes, 32 seconds in.
Sorry. I'm so sorry.
God damn it. Can we have a Tennant story without this?
That's like the fourth one, right? Like...
Must be more.
It's just... that's his catchphrase.
Yeah, yeah. We know that.
Does he choke up a little more every time?
I don't feel like he really nailed it this time. He didn't sell it to me at all. He was just saying it. It's like just verbal diarrhea with this man. He says it every now and then. It's a tick. Yeah. That's what it is. He has sorry Tourette's.
I'm acting. I'm so acting.
Anyway, I feel like that's how he expresses all emotion. I'm hungry.
I'm so hungry. So Toby is back now. He is now sans tats.
Yeah.
And he is exhibiting the zombie effect. He clearly knows that he has, like, something's gone wrong.
Yeah.
But he's just trying to hide it from everyone.
Right.
Bada bing, bada boom.
And then the drill stops.
The drill stops, and not because of the bad reason, but because it's hit its mark.
Yeah. I feel like there's something that we've missed here.
We can probably discuss. We've missed a whole subplot, which is Rose Ood. Talking to the Ood.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, the Ood are super fucked up as an idea. Yeah, they really love what they do, but actually, no spoilers, because we're going to find out later. More origin of the Ood, which is actually one of the more wicked aliens.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They're pretty cool. But no, I like that Rose's championings of a servile race. It's cool. It was a wicked thing to maybe teach kids that even if people seem like that they're happy in doing, you know, as an oppressed people.
I don't feel like it's presented in a way that actually teaches any lessons in any way.
I feel like it does. I feel like Rose is definitely the prevailing wind and everyone else is a dickhead. That's how it's presented.
Well, yes, definitely. But do you think that there's an actual moral lesson to be learned here? Do you not think that she presents or represents that opinion because very clearly everyone in the audience already harbors those thoughts? Clearly everyone is on Rose's side, right?
Well, it's still, I don't know. I think there are modern parallels where we all quite clearly ignore it.
Yeah, she sets an example to follow without being didactic.
Yes, I'm on board with that as an idea.
I'm not on board with that. Okay, sorry, I am on board with that conceptually, but I don't think so because everyone is already following her. I don't think it applies here.
Is it everyone watching her already follows her?
Yeah.
As in the idea that...
Yeah, her opinion isn't that revolutionary.
Well, it totally is, because
literally it is revolutionary. It was once, but at this point...
No, absolutely, everyone is against slavery. Let's not get into modern slavery, but it truly exists. We all benefit from it, but we all ignore it.
Just
the thing that we do. And teaching our kids that it's not okay, even if it seems okay, or even if everyone around you tells you it's okay, it's not okay. It's a cool lesson.
It's less of a waste of time than they could have put in its place.
Absolutely.
I agree with that. And I will agree with half of what you said. You said it's a cool lesson. I think it's cool. I don't think it's a lesson. I don't think there's anything to learn here. I think it's a very, very banal moral example.
Oh, but I don't know. I think there's lessons. I think there's lessons. I don't think it is it's banal in the sense that it still happens quite clearly every day.
There are more things that we learn about the Ood in this episode.
Yep.
We learn that they are surrounded by a telepathic field.
Mm.
They communicate, or they are empaths.
Yep.
And they are at a level 5. Basic telepathy. Basic 5 telepathy. That's what it is. And basic 5 allows them to empathize, essentially, but telepathically empathize with people.
Right.
That's it, right?
Yep.
Boom.
Which makes you think perhaps they shouldn't have said the scariest shit possible before. That people, just as they land on this impossible space station.
Yeah.
Or whatever. They are only basic 5. They're not like basic 30 or anything.
Fuck that means.
Yeah, well, when we get to that scale, God, there is no logic to that scale. I look forward to talking about it. Anyway, where we were before was the drill stops. They have now actually drilled down to the point they were heading for.
They have shafted deep enough.
Yeah. Hot. Blah, 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 blah. The Doctor and What's-Her-Face, Ida, are now supposed to go down to the bottom of this pit.
Say again, it's like
Ida's the woman who's overacting constantly.
Ida's the one that's tasked with going down to investigate, and the Doctor was like, I'm going down, I'm volunteering. And the captain's like, no, that's not cool, you can't do that. It's like, but you trust me, don't you? It's like, kind of do.
I kind of.
Why do you?
Because of that hug. There's clearly is there not a connection here? That was the makeshift captain that he hugged before. By the way, why isn't the bloody captain going down there?
Captain doesn't go on away missions.
Fine, don't send the captain. Send someone who is more likely to be able to physically cope with these things. Here's what I would do. I would send the dude who is clearly like a soldier or something. There's a guy.
A security guy.
Yeah. There's a guy holding a rifle to the Ood. Why do they not send him into an alien hole on a crazy possible planet?
Because when you're sending someone...
Does that not make perfect sense?
When you're to interrogate something like... You need a scientist. You don't need a soldier. A soldier flight. Here's things.
They have the Doctor. They have already established that the Doctor is the scientist in this
mission.
Yeah,
but he's not an authorized person. He's not part of the mission.
So why is he part of the mission?
Because they trust him and he hugged the fucking guy.
I absolutely disagree.
That's the first hug on that space base in 10 years.
I absolutely
disagree.
The Doctor
is immediately vice-captain.
I think she has the requisite qualifications.
And I don't think so.
Has to go down.
I think the guy whom we only see in the beginning and at the end, I think he's the guy who's meant to be doing all the scientific nonsense. And the other person, Ida, she has something, it's something to do with culture as opposed to energy extraction.
Well, sociology.
Dude, they've brought an anthropologist aboard thing.
Yeah.
Like, they clearly...
They're
not saying
it totally
both.
Facetiously.
No, but... Okay, maybe I'm misremembering this. I am utterly convinced that she is not the best person for this mission. Or they're actually doing... they've basically switched missions. Now they're on this historical dig. Like, now they're doing an Indiana Jones. In which case, yeah, sure, bring her aboard. In fact, no, bring her and Toby, not the Doctor. Because that's like that mission.
Maybe they're just making the best of a bad situation. Because Captain A is already dead. If Captain B goes down,
I mean, here's the other
who's
thing.
Captain C?
Here's the other thing. Of the people, maybe she was just the one that said, I'd do it.
I can buy that.
Yeah? We happy with that? Anyhow.
Sorry, yes. Question from the audience.
Don't they always...
That's definitely a Star Trek thing. But in the Doctor's universe, we hate guns. And everyone with a gun is kind of evil.
Well,
even if they're
the
good.
Doctor hates guns, but very often he encounters like less civilized or less futuristic, I guess, humans.
And they like to shoot stuff. But we're to teach them that it's not always the answer.
And clearly, in this case, they are not at a level where they're like above violence. There are two people with guns.
Yeah.
The second Toby reawakens, which he's about to. We should really get back to that plot. But like the second Toby reawakens and he's covered in glyphs again, the first thing that happens is like someone points a rifle at him, right?
Okay, here's an odd observation about the guns.
And that guy, that's the guy, I think, by the way.
The older man, the soldier guy.
Older man, he's like in his 40s. But yeah,
so the guy with the gun and Toby awakens. So there are guns aboard things. Things have happened. Ood, guy with a squiggly face, you know, all that sort of stuff. Not one shot gets fired.
That's true.
There's a lot of backing away.
There's a lot of backing away, slowly.
But no one
shoots things.
Do you think maybe they couldn't afford bullets because they blew it all on that weird sunroof?
I think that they just if we kill things, then there's no problem and then no tension and no plot and no episode.
That's true. Well, I suppose Squiggly Toby, Toby Dick, could have used his telekinetic powers to disable the gun.
They didn't. They literally didn't squeeze trigger.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. You are totally right.
It's the bullshit. Just shoot him in the head. We're done.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So what we've got is the Doctor is now in a lift.
Yes.
And we've established that one of us is right about who is in the lift with him and where they are going.
Well, regardless, he is in the lift with Ida.
Yeah.
And there's a bit more...
The wrong choice.
There's a bit more romantic, you know, play acting. He calls Rose Sir.
Before she kisses his helmet.
She
totally, yes, she does.
She does. She displays her full acting range.
Did you hear that? She does.
Yeah, she does.
From a bit quiet and unhappy to big stupid grin, and then she kisses the Doctor's helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. All right. So we're at a stage now that...
That's love. Actually, I think that's love.
There was one good bit in here where they go all the way down to this hole in the ground, this all majestic and stuff, and they're like... And the Doctor retreats, which never happens.
He's
all Geronimo and shit. Yeah, he goes, he looks, he's like, oh, there's that feeling that I want to jump. He's like, oh, but this time we should go back. And that's when they go back to the lift and then the cable snaps.
You're talking about the second episode.
Ah, fuck.
Spoiler alert.
Cut that.
My bad. Cut that all.
I've got something to say about as they go down in the lift.
Uh-huh.
You know, altitude-wise.
Not on each other.
No. Which is that you've got a CGI shot of the lift moving away very slowly.
Yeah.
You know, you can see the yellow roof going away. And then suddenly, it's plummeting through the earth. And numbers on the screen are spinning around really quickly. It's going like hundreds of meters a second. But it goes down about 1,000 meters. And then for someone who's slightly autistic like me, the unacceptable happens, which is the numbers do not go upwards in a linear number. They go back to zero and it goes 0011, 21, 22. If you watch it back, it's incredibly annoying.
Wow. If you play that backwards, does it read from your like high school maths book?
Yes. Probably.
Okay, that's really weird. I had like, okay, I'm not entirely sure I understand what you just said.
Well, no, what it is, basically, you need to set up in your CGI shot a number, a shot of numbers going upwards. If nothing else, you get an Excel spreadsheet and you drag downwards and the numbers pile up.
Yeah.
If you watch these numbers, I don't know who...
So wait, hang on. What happens on the screen?
You're watching a readout of how deep within the Earth the lift is in terms of meters and miles and stuff like that. And you watch the numbers and they are just bullshit.
This is the same... by the way, you are clearly the more intelligent of the two of us. That was your take from that scene. My note here, because we both have notes on this scene, I've only made a point of saying that on the screen it counts down the oxygen level.
Mm.
And it goes down to zero. And after a while, it stays at zero. And then after a while, it says oxygen, danger. Wait, what, like less than zero? Is that what danger is?
Zero oxygen isn't dangerous?
Exactly. At some point, like, this ceased to be a mathematical reading. It just turns into, oh, there's a problem here. There's no oxygen.
If the guy or girl who, you know, did this readout is listening, you should be ashamed.
Right, let's see. Absolutely. I think I can solve the oxygen thing post hoc.
Okay, do it.
Is that the level of as it was going down, is how much oxygen is being pumped in. But then there's going to be a lag between the amount of that has been pumped in and then is used before it becomes dangerous.
That's
awesome.
Well done. Well done. Well, Sherlock.
Tom, pat me.
Okie dokie. So they get to the bottom of this weird abyss or pit or whatever, the hole that they've drilled. They see a statue of Groot on the wall. And there are these huge, like, basically griffins or statues next to a massive door or opening.
Sphinxy griffin things.
Yeah.
After they throw the gravity ball.
Globe.
Up into the air.
You pointed something out about that.
Yes, that will make another appearance in a Matt Smith episode. Smith, River Phoenix, and Amy Pond.
Okay.
Yeah,
that can be a handful of episodes.
Mm.
All right, then. And they find a massive seal.
Manhole.
Did I just say River Phoenix and not River Song?
Yes.
Oh, you did! Oh, well done! Well spotted. I didn't spot that at all.
Did they do that on purpose?
No, absolutely not.
I thought I hadn't seen that episode.
River Song. River Phoenix. Unfortunately, will never turn up in a Doctor Who.
Very sad. Sad but true.
Not even as young Doctor Who.
No. Oh. Moving on.
Okay, so, alright. Massive seal, blah, 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 blah.
We have forgotten a lot of Ood scenes.
Okay.
With the ethicist and his random gunman mate, who just turns up out of nowhere, I believe.
Yes.
You know, we've kept quite a tight rein on how many people are on this station. Not many. And, you know, we're introduced to them all multiple times.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're a skeleton crew. Most of them are already dead. Every, you know, man is working to the maximum to keep them alive on this impossible planet. And then this gunman just appears. out of nowhere. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why.
And he disappears just as quickly. So when the Uda possessed and become the Legion of the Beast, they advance in their tiny baby steps because, you know, taking full strides would be completely beyond them.
Sure.
And that's then they use their orbs as like yo-yos.
Yeah, they're like I've
death yo-yos.
My note is electric brain yo-yo.
Yeah, there you go.
It's ridiculous. Man. It's totally ridiculous.
I don't know. Have you ever tried around the world? That shit is treacherous.
Why does it electrocute people?
It's, you know, an excess of telepathic energy, I suppose.
That makes perfect sense.
Let's say that. So, yeah, that guy buys it.
Yeah, but the reason this is happening, this is what we were saying before. They're normally a base, what was it? Base 5?
Yeah.
Basic level 5?
And now they're a basic 30, so it means that someone's screaming at them. Or yeah. They're screaming.
No, now they're a number 100. They're a basic level 100.
There is nothing scarier than numbers going up.
Yeah, so we have 3 levels to indicate the logic of this scale. We have 5, which means you are telepathic, and you're an empath.
Yeah.
We have 30, which means someone's shouting at you, and we have 100, which means...
You're brain dead.
You're brain dead. That's the actual explanation. Wouldn't it actually mean that your brain is even more evolved, like you're able to do even more stuff?
Well, no, I don't know. I think more activity doesn't necessarily mean anything. I mean... It does seem to work that way. It's the proportions. It's like, for 30 sounds horrible. I don't want someone shouting at me.
Mm.
100 sounds even worse.
Like, yeah, now I'm dead.
So they buy it, and then they're basically under Ood siege.
We hear the voice of this demon thingy over and over again.
Yeah. This is the first time that Ood refers to them as Satan. He says a bunch of, names, and then, the last one's Satan.
Yeah, true. The seal opens. We hear the demon voice through, from this other pit. There's a pit inside the pit.
Yeah.
The planet begins to fall into the black hole.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy shit, that's an important point.
Everything is going on.
Stuff is going very, very wrong.
The pit is open. I am free.
Your voice work, man.
Yeah. It's important.
That's pretty good.
And then, so by and large... That's the peril that we find ourselves in at the end of The Impossible Planet.
Correctamundo.
Yeah.
Done. Okay. Reviews.
Reviews.
Reviews. Drew, start us off.
Well, I have to say that I have to go up from last time.
Okay. What did you give the last one?
The last one I gave a 2.5, whereas you two gave it 1.8.
Yes,
now I think I was too generous with my 2.5, because this episode, I think, is much better than the previous one. But I can't reflect that in the scores by giving it, a 4.
Okay.
And in my notes, at various points, I do, in between nitpicking and generally scathing reviews of every decision the writers ever took, I do say I am enjoying this episode at this point, and this is going quite well, and I like this little interaction, this little speech, and it ends on a pretty decent cliffhanger, because everything is... falling into the shit, quite literally.
Mm.
And
really, literally? Is that what a black hole is?
Yes, it's
just a massive thing of shit in space. A thing of shit that sucks up light and time.
It is some weird space shit right there.
Yeah. That's true.
That's what it is. So I think I'm going to give it a... Can I bear to give it a 3? I'm going to give it a 2.9.
Oh, wow. Okay. Spoiler alert, I'm going to go higher than that.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so my review... The thing I like about this most is the gravitas. It's trying in some way to inject some real the concept of Satan and the devil or whatever really does exist in almost every culture on planet Earth and has done for thousands of years. So the idea that's the antagonist really does sort of impart that weight and actually the capture of it, the framing, this rock suspended above a black hole and intrepid humans, it's all utterly believable. I'm actually pretty into it as an idea. Beyond some silly plot points, it does really carry the weight. And I think actually on first viewing, it was not, I don't want to say scary. I was still probably a grown man at that point, but it was harrowing. So that leads me to a 3.2.
Oh, okie dokie. I'm going higher than that. I'm giving this a 3.6 because I think I can echo pretty much everything that you've said.
He just looked directly at Nick and blanked me with his eye, if that were possible.
Sorry about that. I can absolutely echo what you just said about the devil.
You singular.
Yes, you singular. I'm sorry. Seriously, dude. I'm sorry. Okay.
Get a better self-esteem.
It is fun. When sci-fi meets mythology, that is, it makes for really fun storytelling. And I think this is... Okay, we're not reviewing the second part of the story. I have a vague recollection of the second part. The Satan Pit, I think it's called.
Satan Pit.
I have a vague recollection thereof. I mean, I remember the core concept of it. And as such, I can say, yeah, I'm totally on board with this idea. And I, even though we don't get to see that really in this one, we only get just hints and hints and hints, I think it works. That being said, it really is a budget version of Event Horizon. Yeah. It quite literally. We were looking at the IMDb trivia page for this episode before we pressed record, and there's a line that says that originally the planet was actually meant to be called Hell, and then before they went to final draft, or in the final draft anyway, they changed that.
They said Hell no.
Hell.
That was good.
Okay. But doesn't that exactly echo the sentiments or the plot of Event Horizon? It works. But some of my favorite stories in Doctor Who are budget versions of the narratives of, like, proper real films. And it really, really works. Like, you have the budget version of Sherlock Holmes. You have the budget version of Murder on the Orient Express. You're, like, all these budget versions of things, like, made-for-TV versions. And I'm totally happy with that. Plus, we get the Ood. The Ood are amazing. We didn't say this during the review. In our review of the Sensorites, one of our listeners sent in an email and said that the Sensorites were, in Doctor Who literature, related to the Ood. And there are very, very clear similarities, like they're empaths, they are blah, 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 whatever. Like, there are similarities. Check out the Sensorites. And I like the Ood. And I mean, having seen the rest of New Who, I know what they're going to turn into. They're really interesting characters.
Sounds like you've been wooed by the Ood.
My only real criticism here concerns two points of criticism. Number one concerns the ham-fisted romance between Rose and the Doctor, which is, it just feels totally fake. It's like they're revving it up. They're going from 0 to 100. They shouldn't. They should, like, just ease it in.
Five,
like,
to 100.
Sorry?
Well, I mean,
yes, exactly.
I mean, to speak to that a bit more, is that actually there, a lot of the in this episode, the romance comes from the peril that they're into, is that actually they're like, oh God, the Doctor's going to this dangerous mission, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And that's kind of, and that's, it's like,
sure.
Isn't that
this
your,
is the
isn't,
right story to do that
well,
in,
no, but I'm just saying, isn't that your raison d'etre as a swashbuckling pair throughout the galaxy? You're always going to be in peril. So are we now going to be treated every time you're in fucking peril?
But it's almost because now they've introduced this idea of a shared mortgage. Now the peril is no longer a welcome treat because they can't escape in the TARDIS. Like, now they're actually going to have a mortgage and a cocker spaniel, you know?
Yeah.
Either way, I felt like this is definitely the right story to have that romance in. Like, he is going off into danger, she should kiss his helmet. But let's have that episode later on. Like, let's have something else before then to build it up a little bit so that it's a gradual romantic development rather than something very sudden. So that pissed me off. And the glasses. David Tennant pulling a complete Rick Perry and just wearing glasses willy-nilly. Like it's fashionable and he absolutely needs it and blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah.
I love the contemporary American politics reference there.
Yeah. In 30 years' time, someone's going to listen to this episode. Like, they're going to go, like, Rick Perry?
Who the fuck is Rick Perry?
Right now, people...
We have one member of the audience that is aware of Rick Perry and his new penchant for glasses.
Yeah, that...
I missed it.
He wears glasses now. It makes him look smart.
Yeah.
Alternatively, people...
We had the conversation the other day.
People could be saying, I can't believe we voted him president 6 times.
After we found out he doesn't need to wear glasses.
If he were to become president, I really hope that he listens to this episode.
And he's invited on.
Yeah,
Come
to Who Back When and talk about Doctor Who.
No, I'll go out and glasses. If you win the nomination...
That's it.
GOP's nomination.
Just the nomination?
You can come on the show.
This is not the point. Let's discuss that afterwards. That's clearly not going to happen. Anyway, that really pissed me off as well. Because it's like, now it absolutely is not part of this guy's... It's part of this guy's wardrobe as opposed to a part of his personality.
Yeah.
And it just ticked me off a little bit. Anyway, 3.6. Good story, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so it's that time again now for listener mini reviews, and this time we only have the solitary one, but it's a good one.
Yeah, and let's add a little disclaimer here as well. There may be something wrong with our email because I have a distinct recollection of there being more than one mini review for this episode.
Yeah, you people that are sitting on your hands at home, just thinking I could do a better job, but you know, just
but not writing anything.
Absolutely,
you know
get in touch.
Yeah, stop complaining, dude. Just write something.
Yeah.
Maybe they found a new thing to do after sitting on their hands.
Have a
you become the smutty one?
You're usurping
Leon's crown.
Oh, so pleased. So pleased. Just a quick note before we start this one. This is a review that covers both The Impossible Planet and The Satan's Pit. Or The Satan Pit? The Satan Pit.
Yes.
And it comes from our first official German fan, Robert M. Albrecht.
The Uber fan, as Nick has dubbed him.
Let's blame Nick. Let's blame
Absolutely,
Nick.
Brilliant.
But I thought that was funny.
Anyway, really appreciate it, Robert. Start us off, Drew.
Robert says, "This is great. I like the funny moments. We could go somewhere else without danger. And it's a great fairy tale, although a very dark one. The Doctor is battling Satan himself, imprisoned from the eternity of times. So old, even the TARDIS can't decrypt the writings."
Ooh. "And like James Bond, the more evil the bad guy gets, the more the hero must rise, and the Doctor rises higher than ever before. And in doing so, he falls down a very long pit, right down to the bottom of all good and evil." Dramatic writing.
I really adore the Doctor's love for the human race. Because it's there! We see the Ood for the first time, a very mysterious race which will become much more important. I really like the Ood. The crew members are great, good characters, with a strong supporting cast, which, yeah, I think I agree with all of those points. Well done, Robert.
Yeah, nice one.
"There is a little open end, as we never really know about the creature's true nature, and who has beaten him in the first place. I think it's a bold move to let some things unexplained. The universe deserves some mystery."
And he gives it 4.5 out of 5.
That is huge, Robert. That's massive.
You have a huge heart.
Yeah.
Nice one. Really nice review. Very dramatically written.
Absolutely. And I think that encompasses the drama of the actual episode itself.
I feel like that's absolutely true.
What I would say, Robert, is you're not leaving yourself a lot of wiggle room there. 4.5 to 5.
That's fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, okay, no, I agree with you. I think
I'm a conservative marker, so sure. You follow your heart, Robert.
Sure. However, bear in mind, there can be tons and tons of stories that are a 4.5 out of 5. I would agree, though, that you could probably get, you know, more than 0.5 better than this, but, you know, each of their own. Robert, awesome review. Thank you so much for sending this in. People who want to follow Robert M. Albrecht on Twitter, tough luck, he's not on there. Thanks again.
But you could follow him in writing a mini review.
Oh,
nice one.
Oh, I segued the shit out of that one.
Well segued. That pretty much brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you very much for listening. The next episode is going to be, in terms of New Who,
the conclusion of this two-parter, The Satan Pit.
In terms of Classic Who, it's going to be The Highlanders.
Bum, bum, bum.
And in terms of Audio Who, it's going to be
Wirrum Dawn.
Which, spoiler alert, I still hate the shit out of.
Enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's start on my left. Do you follow Nick on Twitter?
Yeah, you probably do. It's okay.
No, I'm joking. Wow. Well, all right then. I won't plug you. Drew, you're still not on Twitter?
No, I'm not yet on Twitter because I'm scared of how, you know, big this might get and take over my life.
Okay.
So,
well,
I don't know if I'm ready for such an upheaval.
Fair enough. In the absence of being able to follow Drew on Twitter, go ahead and follow Nick on Twitter anyway.
Yeah. And then shout to me to get Drew to
join Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You are at
Nikolele, Nikulele.
That's like ukulele, but with Nick. Mm. And I am Ponken on Twitter. Please feel free to follow me. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponken.
Thanks, JD. Thank you so much to our live studio audience. Catch you all in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening. Rock on, be rad and excellent to each other. Cha-chow.
Cha-chow.
Bye.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends, no problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who back when?